Last week, if you were here last time, we ended up with a list on my page version. It's 208. You may be off a page or two. But he mentions that he'd reached his boiling point. Many of the things that he talked about were lies. And that's really where we begin with the top of 209 in this version tonight. He says they all were lies. A lot of people, most people perhaps, are not enthused about being lied to. And that can happen in a lot of different realms. It can happen within the family. It can happen within the church. It can happen at the school that we may attend. It may happen at the job site, wherever we may be. But if it happens in areas where there's going to be major consequence, people can be especially upset about that. And here we're not dealing with a few lies. He says they all were lies. He mentions as well, I researched every previously mentioned premise. None of them are found in the Bible. None were true. None were biblically accurate. None have any biblical support. I think that's important for a couple of reasons. When we look at some areas, we may be out of our league as far as determining what's right, what's wrong. A person says, well, I don't know if this is a good one. I don't know if this is a bad one. I simply don't have the background. I don't have the knowledge to determine what's good, what's right, and what's not. We're on about page 209, just across from the bulleted list, if you're looking for the information where we're at tonight. That's upsetting. But when we deal with religion, it's not something that is so specialized that it's impossible for people to learn the truth. In fact, as you look in the last 20 or so years, in some ways it's become a lot easier, in some ways it's maybe become harder, but from the easier perspective, the internet has made things a lot easier. If you're searching for information about religion and you're able to use a keyboard or you're able to speak a command with your voice, the internet will open up a wealth of information for you as far as religion. There is obviously a lot of information out there that is wrong, a lot of junk information. You may have to do a lot of sifting, but eventually you can sort through that and, especially with God's help, find the truth. So this was really pre-internet. He's having to work this out on his own. I think you see the hand of God in here as far as God's providence. Just like you have the man in Acts chapter 8, God will help people if they're searching. But the web has certainly aided many, many people as far as seeking the truth, trying to find out what it is. He mentions as well, while none of these things are found in God's word, they are currently taught by the vast majority of denominations. While none of these things that are true, the vast majority of good people accept them as truth. We talked about that a little bit last time. Why would so many people be fooled? Why would so many people accept information that is not right? We gave a couple of answers to that. One of the answers was what becomes part of society, the sayings that are so common, the things that we hear. You tell a lie often enough, and what's going to happen with people? Remember what we said? They're going to believe it. It may not have any truth, or it may have a shred of truth. It may be mainly true, but if people hear something often enough, and that's why advertisers do that. That's why politicians do that. I'll not raise your taxes. I'll not do this. And when people go to the voting poll, they'll think, oh, yeah, that's the guy that's going to give me good treatment, or he's not going to vote to raise my taxes, whatever. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down a little bit more? Okay. He says, why? Because there is some good in every denomination, and there's some truth in every denomination. I cannot think of a religious group which lacks some truth. Now, maybe there is one out there, but for example, most religious groups would teach that it's wrong to murder. Now, they may be way off in everything else, but if that is one of their tenets, if that is one of their beliefs, it's wrong to murder, it's wrong to steal. Would you say that that group has some truth? Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, that's right. So you could look at it strictly from the standpoint of moral principles and say, yes, these different groups, they do have some expression, some belief when it comes to truth. He mentions as well, this is Satan's cunning strategy. When we think about the devil is no idiot. He's shrewd. The Bible acknowledges that fact. He has great intelligence. He knows that people would never follow him openly. Now, that might not be true exclusively. When you look at some people in life, haters, and you look at some individuals who are just really off kilter, I suspect that there's probably a small element of people who are willing to follow the devil. There are people who claim to be worshipers of the devil. Whether or not that's true or not, that's between them and God and the devil, I guess. But I think at least for the most part, that statement is correct. Many, most would never follow him openly. So the devil likely realizes that. So what's one of his main strategies? I will reach you by... If I can't reach you openly, if I can't reach you directly, if you can't come in the front door, where do you go? You'll go around to the back door. And what's, yeah, he's sneaky. And what's Satan's back door? What's the sneaky approach he uses? I will let you have how much truth? Or could it be more than a little?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Just not all of it. So it could be a little. It could be a moderate amount. It could be most of the truth. But I will keep you away from the way that is completely right. And as long as he can do that, head people down the wrong direction, he seems to be fairly satisfied. So as he mentions in that final prayer paragraph, you can have some truth mixed with some error, some perversion of the truth. He asks then in that next paragraph, what would be the best way to pervert God's will and devour men's souls? We have Satan, he's the adversary, he wants to lead people into apostasy, heresy, and eternal destruction. You cause each division, each faction, to hold on to some truth, let them perhaps get close to the truth, maybe even proclaim that they have the truth. And that strategy also has some other benefits. If you have six groups in town, six different groups, and each of the six different groups claims to profess to hold the truth, teach the truth, practice the truth, they are exclusively the truth. Do you think that can have a negative impact on some other people? All right, we've got some heads nodding yes. What would the negative impact be? Okay, groups 1 through 6 are in town. Each group says, if you come worship with us, you can have the truth. We are the truth. Those six claims, as people in the community hear those six claims, could there be some people who are turned off by that fact? Sorry, I didn't explain it well. Hopefully that's a little bit better. All right, that might do it. There would be some people who would say that's too exclusive for me. There may be another answer here. Jenny?
Well, I think there would be others who would be like, well, if they all think they're right, then I don't know which one to
make. Yes, I think that's the other answer that has to be brought up. Yes, I'm just too frustrated. We can't figure it out. Everybody believes that they're right. Everybody claims that they're right. And I'm going to throw up my hands in frustration. We can't tell. There is that as well.
One thing, you hear one thing, and then it's like, you know, same thing with if they all thought they were right, then why should I believe any of them? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Both of those answers are good. I especially like the first one, though. You do find some people today who was, used to go to some religious group. I used to believe in God, but I gave it all up because it was so confusing. Everybody claimed that they were right, but everybody taught different things. So,
doesn't that also make it seem like there's more than one way then?
Absolutely. But people generally have enough. For example, if 2 plus 2 is 4, but you have 5 other people out there who say, well, 2 plus 2 is a different number. Somebody says, well, it's 4, it's 5, it's 6, 7, 8, 9, and so forth, and everybody's claiming that that number is right. You sit back and say, well, okay, that just doesn't make sense. That's confusing to me. But they're all claiming that, yes, 2 plus 2 is this number. You can give that number, and you're going to be okay on the test and so forth. It really messes with the heads of people, right?
Some might think that the one that claims to be the total truth is just better than everybody else.
There is that. Yeah. But when you start making exclusive claims, that gets the attention of people. Oftentimes, that attention is negative. And that's what we see in tonight's lesson in some respects.
I was just thinking like my family, even though we all went to different types of churches, you know, like other family went to the Catholic Church, some went to the Lutheran, some went here. I have family members who thought that was okay because at least they're going to church,
right,
and we all can be saved.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter which denomination you are.
You do hear that statement as well. Maybe I would prefer them to go over here, but they still go. Well, now wait a minute. That would be somewhat parallel to saying they have an answer plus 2 plus 2, or 4 2 plus 2. It's not 4, it's a different answer, but at least they have an answer. We wouldn't accept that in the area of mathematics. We would say, well, they may have an answer, but that's wrong. And because that's wrong, we can't be supportive of that. I mean, there is truth out here. And that also works in the religious realm. No reason to be ugly about it, no reason to be unkind, but neither do we want to diminish the fact that there is truth. God gave it, we can know it. Gary, do you have a thought?
Wow, you're like a mind reader.
I just noticed fidgeting, so.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, we're so in the land of being able to get anything the way you want it. Mm-hmm. Everything's customizable at the,
sure,
the Have It Your Way Burger King world. And so anytime anyone says that something is exclusive, this is the only way, people, like red flags instantly go up in people's heads, so this is mine. It's like, well, what do you mean? I can't have onions with my sandwich. Of course I do. Well, we don't serve onions. You know, that's just wrong. There's a burger joint in Connecticut that claims they invented the hamburger, and they only serve it one way, and you can't ask for ketchup. Don't dare ask for ketchup. They'll throw you out. And it's just like the people that rubs people the wrong way makes it really hard on us in this type of country where everyone's always used to getting things done their way.
I asked Elijah. He's been at Arby's for, what, 3 weeks now? Month? Elijah, his job at Arby's?
Yes, at Arby's.
Okay. And I asked him, I said, has anybody rolled through the drive-thru and said, I want a Big Mac?
Yes.
He said, well, no, not to me. I said, well, you might be prepared for that. Somebody might try to pull that, and you kind of, he's a quick thinker, so probably just telling you, you need to go down the road for that. But can you imagine going into Arby's and saying, I want a Big Mac?
I mean, that
goes along with your point. Well, what do you mean? You're so harsh, you're so judgmental. I want a Big Mac. But again, that's right. You know, that particular sandwich is not served at this establishment. We have what we have, and if you're not interested in roast beef and maybe some chicken and a salad, tough cookies. You're going to have to go somewhere else and get that there. Stan?
You were talking about the fact that sometimes 2 plus 2 is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You can have a situation that evolves too, where a person who believes 2 and 2 is 4 is introduced to a group who insists that 2 and 2 is 5. And suddenly that individual is doubting their own knowledge of what 2 and 2 really is. And I think that comes into play where, when we talk about baptism for remission of sins, many, many of the other denominations will say, no, that's not necessary. And if one person who believes that that's true is subjected to every one of those groups, they begin to say, well, to themselves, maybe I am wrong. Everybody else believes it's the other way.
Yeah. The things that we're dealing with, whether it's in religion or whether it's in the secular realm, when you start talking about exclusiveness, when you start talking about limitation, it really gets the attention of people, and sometimes it frustrates people, especially in the area of religion. But the Bible does talk about these areas, and it does talk about them in a very firm way.
Well, just like you were talking about, the devil is sneaky, or he comes in the back way. If a new Christian is firm in their belief because they're so new, and then all of a sudden everyone around mm-hmm. they're proud, and they tell everyone, hey, I'm a Christian, and everyone else says, you don't need to be baptized to be a Christian. And then all that the devil needs is that little bit of ounce mm-hmm. of doubt for that Christian to fall away.
Sows the seed. Mm-hmm. The seed of dispute, the seed of doubt, the seed of division, in this case denominationalism, and it becomes a problem. And you have sometimes not just the new Christian facing people outside the church, but we live in a time where there's some congregations that are not too strong when it comes to doctrinal matters, and you'll find that coming from within. And if that's coming from the eldership, the pulpit, other members, that becomes a serious problem. Anybody else before we move down a little more? Okay. He talks about the devil. This is at the bottom of 209 in the edition I have, keeping them in this state until they die. And that's all the devil needs. He doesn't need to keep teaching you throughout eternity, does he? Once death comes, you've sealed your fate, whether you're in a right relationship with God or not, and then he's able to obviously freely move on to other people and continue his work. Up the next page, he says, does this sound unreasonable? Does it cause you to marvel? Well, consider what Paul said. He cites here's 2 Corinthians 11, verses 13 through 15. He mentions false apostles, deceitful workers, transferring themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, he says, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their work. So the devil has no problem pretending to be whatever people want. In this case, he's willing to pretend to be righteous, willing to be associated with the truth, even though that is not the case. He mentions it was becoming crystal clear that the devil transforms himself into an angel of light. As you mentioned, he will do whatever is necessary to convince people and lead astray people that we would generally think of as good people. People who are, in our eyes, good, people who are moral, people who are loving, people who are sincere, people who are zealous. And some of those people are preachers. When you look at denominational preachers, you find sometimes some people who are very fine people. I've known some people who preach for denominations, and they were very good people. Compared to all the other individuals in a community, they would be pillars in the community as far as things that they were trying to do. And as far as their moral stance, the things that they taught, the things that they believed, the things that they did, 5 stars. But still, that gets us back to the problem. It's not a matter of being a good person. It's a matter of being right with God. And that comes, as we mentioned Sunday night, hearing and obeying. And if we are not doing those two things, then we are in serious trouble. He mentions from Matthew chapter 22, verse 9 or 29, you do err not knowing the scriptures. That's going to be a problem. Ignorance of the Bible causes good, moral, sincere people to err in their religious thinking and practices. He mentions Matthew 15, verse 9. But in vain do they what? They worship me, so there's no problem with the worship. They are sincere. They're committed. They show up. But in vain do they worship me. Why? Because they teach, they practice the doctrines, the commandments of men. And that is an issue. God has given his word, and if people want to go in some other direction, there's a consequence for that, and it's not a favorable consequence. He mentions vain worship is unacceptable worship to God. It is worship which is ineffectual, unsuccessful, futile, without effect, no avail. And it really goes back to what you find in the Garden of Eden. What did the devil tell Eve?
You shall not die.
Yeah. God said, you're going to die. Satan changes that just a little bit. He puts the word not in there, that three-letter word. Three-letter word. Steve, did you have a thought?
Yeah. This may come up in the lesson, but the verse that I think of, the passage that I think of, talking about this is in 2 Timothy 4 and 3, where it says, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desire, because they have itching ears. So I was thinking of the itching ears. It sounds good to them, so that's what they're, that's what they go.
You think Eve had some itching ears? God said, stay away from the fruit. The devil comes along and says what? It's okay. It's nice. It must taste good. Now, I don't know that he said it that way, but whatever he said, it must have been along those lines. Itching ears. And finally, the old temptation was enough, where she and Adam both ate.
Well, she may have been hanging around the tree looking
at
it, and Satan kind of watches for stuff like that.
Sure. People today, people today do that as well. They're flirting with sin. They're skirting around sin. We don't want to get too close, but we'll just, People did that. Did you see the story not too long ago? There was the couple. I think they were newly married. It was the fiance. He wanted to get a good shot off the area of the ledge. He got too close and fell off the ledge. He died. Anybody see that story? Again, you did. So that reminds me of that. Let's get closer and closer and closer. We'll get a great picture. Well, it didn't turn out to be the picture that they wanted, obviously. Okay, the devil uses the same strategy today. You don't need to be baptized. There is not one body. Denominationalism is not wrong. Following your emotions, that's not wrong. God doesn't care about how you worship. Your heart following it is not wrong. Religious division is not wrong. The church that you've chosen does not matter. Millions of people cannot be wrong. That's one of the most painful things I hear. Do you believe that millions of people are not wrong? There's a clip circulating right now of Bernie. Remember him? Fellow who ran for president. There was a fellow, he was a well-known preacher, and he actually showed a 4-minute video clip as part of his sermon. And the video clip has that senator grilling the guy that was the nominee. Now, I'd seen bits and pieces of it, but I didn't actually see all 4 minutes of that until today. And it was actually amazing the way that he went after that nominee. And but the devil tries to change things up just a little bit, and that is a problem. Jesus, Matthew 7, 21 through 23, I think we're familiar with these verses. Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven. He that doeth the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not done all these many works? Jesus will profess to them, I never knew you, depart from me. He asked the question, who are these people? We've pointed this out many, many times. Jesus says, I never what? Knew you. And it's not that we were connected for a while and we were disconnected, but he says, I never knew you. We were never joined. You did not take the steps to enter into Christ. And because we were never joined, you're here before me, you are accountable for your actions, so what must be the end result? You've got to go away. You must spend eternity in hell because we were never joined. You never had a connection to the one that could save you. So it mentions, in the end, these good people will be cast away into eternal destruction. Can you imagine the shock, the complete bewilderment? Anybody ever been in a situation where you thought you were going to get something and it turned out that you didn't get what you thought you were going to get? Anybody been in that situation and want to share what it was?
No.
It's that follow-up question that gets you. Kind of shock. All right. All right. Okay. Anybody have that experience and want to elaborate? You thought that you were going to get something, and the answer was no. Well, I'll toss that one. I went down for my driver's license. I failed it the first time. And here I am. I mean, I'm sailing along, and everything seems to be great, and we get back, and I'm ready for the examiner to say, "You passed. Go in and get your license." He said, "You failed." Wow. Shock, bewilderment. I mean, we didn't get pulled over by the police. I didn't run over any curbs. I mean, everything seemed good to me. And I said, "What was the problem?" He said, "You failed before we even hit the street." Wow. Then I was really shocked. And I said, "What did I do?" He said, "Well, I came up to the street, looked both ways, but I didn't make a complete stop before I pulled out. And that failed me." So at the age of 15, 16, whatever it was, like I said, I was blown away that I didn't get it the first shot. So went back and got it the second time around. I made sure I stopped. So I remembered that over the years. Have a policeman behind you, you make sure that you really stop because they pay close attention to that stuff. All right. Learn interesting things in Bible class, don't we? All right. Anybody else before we move down a little bit? Okay. Let's see, we mentioned Matthew 15, verse 9, vain worship is not acceptable to God, Matthew 7, 21 and 23, so he says, consider these verses again, they are very, very serious. As we turn the page, close out the chapter, he says, studying the Bible was removing my blindness. It was giving me the spiritual sight I needed. For the first time in my life, spiritual 20/20 vision was within reach. Those are encouraging words. You have people today, sometimes they look at you and they think, well, you've kind of gotten the Bible figured out, and you've got a good understanding of spiritual truth, but that could never be me in a million years. I just have tried to read the Bible. I can't understand it. I'm glad for you, but there's no hope for me. That's not true. You can know the truth. When you look at people, the Bible, as far as the type of Greek that it was written in the everyday Greek, Koine Greek, for the common man. Jesus, when you look at the type of language that he used, he didn't use a bunch of $10 words. He put it in very simple terms. People in third world countries have been taught the Bible. And if you're willing to listen, we talked about that again recently. He who has what? Ears. Let him close them because he can't understand. No. He who has ears, do what? Let him hear. It is possible, Jesus said, to hear. And not only can you hear, you can obey because you understand the message. Anything that you want to add or ask before we close out that chapter, Carol? Sure, and that's why I think we dealt with this a little bit as far as Dave's funeral. Try yourselves, whether you're in the faith. 2 Corinthians chapter 13, about verse 5. Check yourselves out, the people who examine the scriptures daily. When you start thinking about living the Christian life, everybody's going to fall short. But we want to make sure that we have found the truth. We're doing our best to walk in that truth. When you look at the New Testament, and maybe this is one of the reasons that God configured the New Testament this way in contrast to the Old Testament, but if you were going to take the basic steps to become a child of God, as we would in the New Testament, but you were going to say, okay, the testament that I have to live under is the Old Testament with the 600 plus laws, I think I'd sweat some things. Because God says, this is the system, and you're thinking, wow, you know, okay, I can remember 250 of the commandments, but what about the other 350 plus? I mean, wow. But that's not the system that we have. It's not the covenant. It's not the agreement that we have. with the New Testament. There is that body of truth that we have. When it comes to becoming a Christian, the basics of the Christian life, the basics of the Christian church. And it doesn't hurt to restudy those things from time to time. About once a year, and this is because of a former teacher I had, not anything that I came up with. But he said about once a year, it's good to go back and sort of reaffirm the basics. The way that he described that in this class was, that may be helpful to new Christians, hopefully it will. But it also helps shore up the faith of older Christians. You're going back and you're looking at those passages, you're looking at those things again. Maybe there's some items that as a preacher you'll pick up too. Hopefully you will. But it's a way for people who have been members of the faith for years and years to go back and say, yes, we have found the truth, we're headed in the right way. But that's a sign of a good and honest heart. That, God, if there's something I've missed, something I'm overlooking, some points we're in were wrong, and there's some error that needs to be corrected, we want to fix those things. Anybody else want to add to that? Betty?
Kind of going with what we're talking about here, and that you hear something often enough and you believe it, and then studying the Bible, removing your blindness, and opening you up to things maybe you've read in the Bible and not even thought about it being different than what you've been led to believe all these years it was. I've kind of had one of those experiences this week. I was reading an article in the Gospel Advocate about how to study the Bible, and one of the things was to keep it in context. And the example he used was that a lot of people don't go to church, and you ask them about it, and they'll say, well, it says in the Bible that wherever two or three are, there I will be in the midst. So if I'm out under a tree, he's going to be there with me. And I've heard that all my life, really, even in the denomination. And he was the author of the article I was reading, said that verse is not used in that context in that book of the Bible. That it is used in the context of the fact that if a brother has wronged you, you go and talk to him. If that doesn't work, you take two or three witnesses, and then I will be in the midst.
Yeah, Matthew 18, yes.
Yes. And I had never put that together. I had always put it the other, like I'd heard all these years. So, I mean, you can study the Bible and still miss things.
Yeah. I pick up things on a regular basis, and I'm not ashamed to admit that. For example, we spent a lot of time going through the book of Revelation, a couple years. And this past week, there was a fellow who sent an article to me. I'll probably use that as a BNP at some point. But he made the point, maybe I mentioned this here. I was talking to a couple people about it. So if I mentioned it here, that was the context, forgive me. But remember the two beasts in Job, Leviathan and Behemoth? All right, don't know a lot about those creatures, but they were creatures that Job didn't really want to mess with. I mean, they were fearsome, they were awesome, they were terrible creatures. We've mentioned before that John, in the book of Revelation, often pulled from the Old Testament. Well, you get into the New Testament, the book of Revelation, how many beasts do you read about? Two. There's the land beast and there's the sea beast. Do you think it's possible that those two beasts back there in Job, Leviathan and Behemoth, maybe we're pointing forward, at least in some respects, to those two beasts in Revelation? I don't know for sure, but I think that's very attractive. So, like I say, I had never connected, out of all the things that I looked at as far as Job and Revelation, that had just completely gone past my spiritual vision. But he brought that up, and I thought that is definitely worthy of mentioning if you were going to either be teaching a class on Job or a class on Revelation. So you continue to search, and you continue to find things like that. Some you forget, maybe with as the years go by, you think, oh yeah, well, maybe you knew that 25 years ago, but for whatever reason, it just didn't stick with you. But then there's some other things, hey, yeah, look at the context there. And it really is amazing how some things light up.
Yeah, because I've read it many times, and it's like, because I had heard it
yes.
many times the other way, it registered that the verse was there, and okay, but it didn't.
Yeah, and sometimes that's the problem.
Different context than what I
Maybe you've heard that preached or taught in a Bible class a certain way, and somebody comes in as a guest speaker and says, let's look at this. Let's see how it's connected. All of a sudden, So, I'm not ashamed to admit this. I don't know that I've got a ton of things that I've done this on, but I need to either revise that part of class that I taught, or I need to tear up that sermon. And there have been a few sermons I've torn up over the years, just because at a later time, I learned something and I thought, no, no.
I know there are certain situations, like if you're caught in a snowstorm and you worship at home with your family.
Sure.
And maybe another family with you or something. Yes, the Lord's going to be there, you know. But to use it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, in that way. You can
come to church because I can go out into the tree.
Yeah.
He's going to be with me. I don't ever have to go to church. He'll be with me out there under the tree.
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't what it was saying.
Yeah.
Margaret?
I was just going to say, do you know the echo of the receptive part? You don't have the receptive part.
Yeah, that's true. Anybody else? Okay, let's move into the new chapter. In the new chapter, this should be marked as chapter 25. It talks about the church of the Bible. You have another situation, which is a work situation, work environment. Randall sitting at his desk, back to the coffee and the Krispy Kreme donuts. Mr. Mike, he began with his Bible open. Let's start with the church. If you're talking to people about the Bible, eventually this is a topic which needs to be addressed because it is a very important topic. So Mike's receptive to that. He tries to match Randall's upbeat attitude. What do you know about the church of the Bible? This is sometimes open-ended questions are very good. It's not that we're trying to trick people. It's not that we're trying to lead people astray. But that can be a good way to assess a person's knowledge. I remember a fellow, denominational preacher. He talked to another preacher tied in with the church. And the preacher tied in with the church, I'm not going to give any names, you might know this guy, but the preacher tied in with the church, talked to this fellow, and talked to him on a level of somebody that knew nothing about the Bible. Now you imagine that you are a denominational preacher who has come out of that, or at least trying to come out of that. And you've been a denominational preacher for maybe 20 plus years, which I think is probably about how long this guy had been preaching. How would you feel if somebody treats you like a spiritual idiot? Probably not too good. And this fella, it didn't take very long in talking to him to determine that he felt really bitter against the church. And all of that went back to the fact, I think, that the fella who had talked to him before treated him like a spiritual imbecile. So, not that I had all the answers, and I still don't claim that, but when we sat down and I started to ask some questions, and this was sort of my approach as well. What do you think or what do you know as far as what the Bible says concerning the church? I wanted to see where he was as far as assessing that level of knowledge. He knew some things. There were some things that he didn't. And that's really what you have here with Randall. What do you know about the church? I thought about it. Randall, until I met you, I didn't know anything about the church of the Bible. Do you think that's true for a lot of people in the world? I suspect that for most of the individuals that we work with, they probably know, you know, faith and repentance and be a good person and some of the stuff from the Sermon on the Mount and Psalm 23 and John chapter 14 and maybe, you know, rejoice always, Philippians chapter 4. But when it comes to the church of the Bible, it's kind of like, huh. And part of the problem, I think, is exactly what Betty described. Maybe you haven't heard it, or if you have, it's been the same stuff which isn't consistent with Scripture. So when you read the word church in the Bible, what happens mentally? You just go. Remember the illustration I gave a few weeks ago about Wings Restaurant? Down in Dunlap? Been there for a while? But my vision wasn't attuned to Wings Restaurant, so I just drive right by it. I see it, but I don't. And that's what Jesus described. He said, you hear, but you don't hear. Remember? Going in one ear and right out the other. And that can happen to us spiritually. So that's sort of what happened to Mike. Surely you've heard sermons about the church of the Bible. No. I responded honestly. Church, at least from what I remember, was always something that was secondary to salvation. Do you think that's also true for most people in the world when they think about the church? Yeah. Salvation is the big thing. Have the relationship with Christ. And then when it comes to the church, what's generally taught? Join the church of your choice. The church is secondary. Find a place where your kids fit in, they've got good programs, you like the music and so forth. Those are common things that are taught. He says, I was taught that salvation and church membership are totally separate matters. And that's so sad because that is so wrong. He asked, too, were you taught that you had to be faithful to the church to go to heaven? No. And for a lot of people, that answer would be the same. All right, let's skip over a page or a page thereabouts, depending upon the edition of the book that you have. He said, all right, let's go back for a minute. Let's pull out Matthew 16, verse 18. This is where Jesus told Peter he would build his church. So, yeah, guy says, Mike says, I remember that from our previous study. So we've looked at that verse at various times here. Jesus said to Peter, I say unto you that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. Who built the church? Jesus. Who then makes the rules? Jesus. How many churches did Christ build? One. How do we know that? Well, there's that, but we could add something to it. What's the extra answer? How do we know he built one? I will build my church, which is singular versus plural. So we have the builder, we have the rule maker, we have the number of churches from just one verse. Then we have in Acts chapter 2, verse 38, Peter telling people to repent and be baptized for the forgiveness of sins, the reception of the Holy Spirit, and then he drops him down to verse 41. Then they that gladly received his word were baptized. And that same day there was what? There were people who were added unto them. Now, depending on your translation, it may say something like them. You may have the word church there. But if you don't have the word church there, added unto them still indicates that there was some collection of people. There was some group. There was some body that people were added to, and it was a fairly sizable body. About 3,000 people came into this body. He asked Mr. Mike, not all received what Peter said, did they? Well, evidently not. He says, how many received his word? About 3,000, based on verse 41. And then he asks, and different figures are given. We've discussed this before as well, partly in our Acts class. But this was a major Jewish feast. Some people have estimated that 1 million Jews were there. It may not have been that many. But even if you have 500,000, even if you had 250,000, when you take 3,000, about 3,000 out of that, would you say that that's many or few? The percentage of them. Yeah, 3,000 would be a lot if you were to line them up, but when you look at the percentage, it's very small from that perspective. So he says, you're kidding. No, man, I'm not kidding. This is one of the primary holy events in the life of the Jew. So you have several people there, hundreds of thousands, we believe, small percentage of the group added to something. All right, then on the next page we find they were added unto them. Yeah, who added them? I don't know. He said, well, let's go back and look at Acts 2, verse 47. Praising God, having favor with all the people. And who did the adding? The Lord added to the church, how often? Daily, such as should be saved. 3 points are really significant there. Number one, when it comes to a lot of religious groups, who does the adding? People do. It may be the preacher, it may be a board, someone else. But the Bible says it's the Lord who does the adding. How often did the Lord do the adding? Daily. All right, when you look at religious groups, how often will they add you to the church?
Quarterly.
Well, it may be quarterly. It may be we've got 2 times a year when we'll add you to the church. So you've kind of come in between times, so you wait another 3 months and you'll be added to the church. But that's not how it worked. People were obeying the gospel, people were added to the church. And then you have the third point, the Lord added to the church daily, such as should be saved. Salvation, adding to the church, go hand in hand. But we've already seen with Mike's experience that he was saved and then his adding to the church, joining the church, comes how long later?
5 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long time, roughly 60 months. It says the people that gladly received Peter's words were the ones who were added. And what did those people do to receive his words? They repented, they were baptized. At the bottom of the page, he says, so Mike, the church is made up of the saved and the saved make up the church. That's what the Bible says. He says, well, I grew up and had to be voted on. Mike, the church was called many things, the body, the bride, the kingdom, the household of faith, the pillar and the ground of the truth, the spiritual house, and then he runs him over to the book of Colossians, Colossians chapter 1, verse 18. This is a fine verse. I usually like Ephesians 1, 22 and 23 better, but Colossians 1, 18 sort of sums it up all in one verse. And here you have, and he that will be Christ is the head of the body, comma, the body is the church. So when you have the body referred to in Colossians 1:18 or Ephesians 1, 22 and 23, you're saying this is the same as the church. Body and church are used interchangeably. That's important because when you look at the book of Ephesians, chapter 4, verses 4 and 5, how many bodies do you read about? One. All right, there's one body, Ephesians 4, 4, and 5. When you look at Colossians 1, 18, the church is the body. So if there's only one body, Ephesians 4, 5, and you know that the body is the church, then there is not only one body, there's also one church. And the logic of that is irrefutable. Now, people will sometimes try to get around that by saying, well, look, yes, you have one body, but it's made up of all these different churches. And they'll go back to John 15. Remember, we talked about that passage? But that doesn't work either for a lot of reasons. Randall asks towards the bottom of the page, now, if the church is the body, and Paul said there's only one body, how many churches are there? He realizes that there must be one. And for him, it was like opening a treasure chest full of gold. So, Randall, I said as I looked up the page, yeah, is this the reason for the bad rap? He explains that at the top of the next page. What do you mean? Kirk told me to stay away from you because your church believes that you're the only ones going to heaven. Is this where it comes from? Yes. People took a little information and they used that, unfortunately, in a very bad way. Good people like Kirk hear bits and pieces, but they never want to take the time to sit down and find out exactly what the Bible teaches. They go off half-cocked and looking to pick a fight, or they spread rumors and gossip trying to stir as much trouble as possible. A couple quick points here. Number one, how does he describe Kirk? All right, he describes him in a positive way. How could he have described Kirk? Why, that low-down snake. He's as filthy as a co-worker as I've ever seen. Could he have said that? Do you think that would have been helpful to the cause? No. Kirk probably didn't know any better. I mean, this is where he was spiritually. So he took that little bit of knowledge, maybe thinking that he was going to help Mike, but that certainly was not the case. So you try to be as kind as you can to people. In this case, you find Randall being kind to Kirk. Then you have Mike's response, and then Randall thinks about it for a second and says, "Be sober, be vigilant. Your adversary, the devil, is like a roaring lion. He walks about seeking whom he may devour." 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. He makes the point that Satan's always present, always there trying to lead people away from the truth. "Mr. Mike, people have no problem," and this is something I starred. "Mike, people have no problem with the idea that there are how many gods? One. How many faiths? One. How many Holy Spirits? One. How many Christs? How many heavens? How many hells? One. How many Bibles? One. How many churches? One." So it's interesting that people will say, yes, one, thousands. And you just have to stop mentally for a second and think, wait, how does that compute? But the answer goes back to what we've already looked at tonight. People are taught. That's the way religion is. If they were taught that there are many gods, thousands of gods, and are there people like that in life? Can we find that there are people who believe in hundreds of gods? We know that's true, don't we? What do we see in Acts chapter 17? Paul says, "I passed on, I was out there, and what did I see? All the gods of your allegiance." And then he says, "I saw this one marker to what kind of God? To the unknown God." If you didn't cover one, we also had one for him. And he says, "That's the God I want to talk to you about." So people, even today, talk about God and God and God, hundreds if not thousands of gods. But when you start looking at the church, because of how people have been taught, because of how they've been trained, they literally freak out. Randall, it's because it sounds so narrow. We've been told throughout our entire lives it is the exact opposite. "Yeah, Mr. Mike, I know that," replied Randall. Anything that you want to add or ask at this point? Okay, let's just stop right there. He mentions Ephesians 5, 23 to 25. So 2:18 will be where we hold things for next week.